I have some honest and probing questions for Pastor Andy Stanley today. I wonder what your take is on these controversial issues.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Well, I am coming your way live from Bradenton, Florida again. I'm broadcasting from one of the offices, the administrative offices at a ministry and church and retreat center here. And they have signs all up and down the hallway. Quiet, quiet, audio broadcast in progress. Please be quiet in the hallway. So I told them you don't have to tiptoe through because I'm in a nice big office here. We've got our portable radio set up and good to go, just like we're in our home studio, ready to take your calls. We're going to have a great discussion today. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Some controversial issues, some challenging issues, and questions that I pose to Pastor Andy Stanley, son of Pastor Charles Stanley, pastor of what may be the second largest church in America, and the largest in the metro Atlanta area. And Pastor Andy, I'm sure, has done a lot of good and a lot of areas and has brought the gospel to many. I have some honest questions for Pastor Andy Stanley. We were unable to reach him privately, and I understand that when you are in demand, as he is in demand, if he doesn't know who you are personally, or perhaps it's not a media source he's familiar with, it may not even, a request will probably not even get to him. But I felt it was appropriate, since his comments were made publicly, that I raised questions publicly. To read them, go to my website, askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org, and click on latest article. So here's the context, and I want to get your feedback as I raise questions to what he had to say. There was a bill that is now on hold, it's not going anywhere for the moment, in Kansas House Bill 2453, and it had a very narrow and specific purpose. It is Wednesday, unless you're listening in Miami, in which case you're hearing this on Thursday, but it's Wednesday. We're focusing on the world, on moral and cultural issues, and this bill was a very specific and narrow bill designed to protect religious individuals, groups, or businesses from being penalized for refusal to participate in services related to same-sex marriage. So someone comes into your florist shop and they say, hey, we're getting married. My friend Jim and I, Joe and Jim, we're getting married and we want you to do the floral arrangement. You say, hey, you know that we've sold you floral arrangements for years for 1,000 different things you've done, but this violates religious conviction. Sorry, we can't do it. That the government would be unable to penalize that business or individual group, however it would work out. Well, the bill was falsely and wrongly compared to Jim Crow laws. Ryan Anderson has a clear article refuting that. I cite that in my article as well. But where does Andy Stanley come in with this? Well, Kirsten Powers, who's a liberal correspondent on Fox News, she wrote an article strongly criticizing the bill, claiming that it was just the reincarnation of Jim Crow laws today. And Andy Stanley told her, this is how it's written, that he told her, quote, that he finds it offensive that Christians would leverage faith to support the Kansas law. He said, quote, serving people we don't see eye to eye with is the essence of Christianity. Jesus died for a world with which he didn't see eye to eye. If a bakery doesn't want to sell its products to a gay couple, it's their business, literally, but leave Jesus out of it. He further stated, Jesus taught that if a person is divorced and gets remarried, it's adultery. So if Christians don't have a problem doing business with people getting remarried, why refuse to do business with gays and lesbians? So I've got five questions for Pastor Andy Stanley and for you as well. We'll take them up, get your responses. We're going to get you thinking today on the Line of Fire.
Change the world. It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for joining us on The Line of Fire, your listener-sponsored voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Thanks to all of you in each city where I'm speaking to you right now via radio. Thanks to all of you who pray for us. Thanks to all of you who send words of encouragement. Thanks in particular to those who have chosen to stand with us financially as monthly supporters or with single gifts. Thank you so much for being part of this broadcast and enabling us to speak on these airwaves. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Again, Pastor Andy Stanley, with regard to Kansas House Bill 2453, which was designed with one purpose and one purpose only, again, to protect religious individuals, groups, or businesses from being penalized for refusal to participate in services related to same-sex so-called marriage. Pastor Stanley said this, quote, he finds it offensive that Christians would leverage faith to support the Kansas law. Again, he said, serving people we don't see eye to eye with is the essence of Christianity. Jesus died for a world with which he didn't see eye to eye. If a bakery doesn't want to sell its products to a gay couple, it's their business, literally. But leave Jesus out of it. Now, some of you are sitting there thinking, leave Jesus out of it. How do you leave Jesus out of your life? How do you leave Jesus out of your major decisions? How do you leave Jesus out of your business decisions, especially if you're a Christian-owned business? Here's my first question for Pastor Stanley and for those who were critical of the bill, which again is not under consideration right now. It has been dropped for now. First question, were you responding to the actual content of the bill, or were you responding to how critics misrepresented the bill? Again, were you responding to the actual content of the bill, or were you responding to how critics misrepresented the bill? Ryan Anderson noted in his article that the bill would protect all citizens from being forced by the government into recognizing or celebrating a same-sex marriage if it ran contrary to their religious beliefs. So the issue is not whether a bakery would be willing to sell cookies to a same-sex couple or would, quote, do business with gays and lesbians. That wasn't the issue. Look, sometimes I'm asked to respond to something, and I respond to the question I've been given. I'll be told, thus and such has been decided, and thus and such a court, or have you heard this ruling? No, I haven't. Okay, well, here's what's being said. How do you respond to it? And in years past, I've said, okay, here's my response based on what you have said. But obviously, what you want to do is look firsthand and see what's actually under discussion so you're responding to reality, not someone's interpretation of what was said. So that's my first question for Pastor Andy Stanley. And again, we reached out to him personally to interact or to come on the air, and he was not available, which, again, I understand. He's a busy man. Were you responding to what the bill actually said, Pastor Stanley? Because the response didn't line up, in my thinking, with what the bill is talking about. It has nothing to do with doing business with gays and lesbians. It has nothing to do with if an openly gay man comes in and clearly out and proud and wants to buy a donut in the bakery, and you say, I hate your lifestyle, man. You get out of here. Oh, that's offensive. That's obscene. That's terrible. Of course. And it's anything but Christian. So he wants a donut. You sell him a donut. And you're polite to him as anybody else. In fact, you might even reach out with more grace and love to let him know that you care about him as an individual. And that the way he's living doesn't put you off. Or what he's shouting out doesn't put you off. That's totally different than if he comes in with his partner and says, we'd like you to bake us a cake for our wedding. And we wanted to say to Billy and Bob on their wedding day, And we, you know, we want the little mannequins, the little, you know, the whatever you call it, little statuette things, you know, they put on top of the cake. But here's a man and man. You want that. That's the issue. Not doing business with gays and lesbians. So were you aware of that distinction? Because the comments you made didn't seem to make that distinction. And maybe you're fully aware of it and you stand by those comments. Okay. Second question. And I'd like your input, folks, on this. 866-34-TRUTH. I'm wondering, Pastor Stanley, why you find it offensive that people of faith also, quote, leverage faith when it comes to freedoms of conscience, speech, and religion. So if the government told you, Pastor, as a pastor, that you were required to perform same-sex weddings in your church, which could happen in some countries, could happen here, one Scandinavian country where the bishop must provide someone to perform the same-sex ceremonies. Is it Norway or Denmark? I forget. So an individual cleric can say, I decline, but the bishop will then have to provide someone else. There is big discussion right now in the UK as to whether churches will be required to participate in same-sex, quote, wedding ceremonies, or if they say that they can't do it, then is that being discriminatory? Well, if it came to the point where it was considered discriminatory for a pastor or religious leader to say in his own congregation, I will not perform a same-sex, quote, wedding ceremony, Pastor Stanley, if you were asked to do that, wouldn't you leverage faith? Wouldn't you say, as a follower of Jesus, as a servant of the Lord, as a man of God, that your faith forbade you from doing this? It has nothing to do with hating people. It has nothing to do with being discriminatory. But rather, your faith says you can't do it. And, quote, you are leveraging faith. Third question. And there are some great comments on the charismanews.com opinion site responding to this article, which is being shared widely already. Pastor Stanley stated, quote, serving people we don't see eye to eye with is the essence of Christianity. I absolutely understand the point you're trying to make. But are you telling me that if I'm in the medical supply business and I'm asked to supply medical equipment for a late-term abortionist, I should do so? Since, quote, serving people we don't see eye to eye with is the essence of Christianity? Or Pastor Stanley, are you saying that it is, quote, the essence of Christianity to help a late-term abortionist rip up a baby in the womb? Or are you telling me that if I lived in the days of slavery and I was asked by some slave traders to manufacture shackles for the slaves, that I should do so with excellence and diligence, since, quote, serving people we don't see eye to eye with is the essence of Christianity? So I'm trying to understand if that's what Pastor Stanley means. My request, if not, could you clarify what is different between these scenarios and that of a Christian being asked to help facilitate a homosexual marriage, something that our Father clearly abhors? So do you agree with Pastor Stanley that, quote, serving people we don't see eye to eye with is the essence of Christianity? I certainly do. I certainly see that we should serve people that we differ with, that we don't see eye to eye with, even those who oppose us. In fact, we're to overcome evil with good. If our enemy's hungry, we feed him. If he's thirsty, we give him something to drink. But is there a difference between doing that and participating in sin? Is there a difference between that and facilitating sin? Is there a difference between telling your gay neighbors when they're away, hey, I'll get your mail for you, and I'm going to mow your lawn while you're away, and or they're out there one day mowing their lawn, and you see that it's hot and sweaty, and you come over there with some lemonade and say, hey, looks like you need a break, and you show them love of God. Is there a difference between that and catering their, quote, marriage ceremony? Do you make a distinction between the two? I would. I would definitely make a distinction. I would say one is serving people and loving people and being a light and demonstrating the goodness of God. And another is facilitating sin or facilitating darkness. For example, I would make a distinction between pouring funds into a poor Hindu neighborhood to get these kids food and clothing and shelter and basic language training and, you know, basic education and so on. I would make a distinction between that and giving them money to build a new Hindu shrine to whatever god or goddess they worshipped. I would make a distinction between the two. And it seemed from what Pastor Stanley was saying here that he didn't make that distinction. So again, I'm asking for clarity on this and want to get your feedback as well. 866-348-7884. In the second hour, we're going to have some special guests on. Just a heads up for those that are able to listen to the second hour or catch it online. But tomorrow, during this hour, don't miss my special guest, Itamar Marcus from Israel, PALWatch.org. He'll tell you about what's being broadcast on Muslim TV, and you're in for a shocking broadcast tomorrow.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All of us come from extravagant love. Extravagant love. And I don't ever want to be one of the ones who stands in the way of love. In an attempt to be a disciple, and I fall short all the time, but in an attempt to be a disciple, I will not stand on the side of discriminating anyone.
That was Reverend Dwayne Davis of Metropolitan Community Church of D.C., which is a gay and lesbian church and denomination. He is speaking as a, quote, gay Christian and sharing a message on LGBT equality. This was during the historic hearings on Proposition 8 and the Defense of Marriage Act. Interviews took place on March 26th and 27th, 2013, in front of the Supreme Court building. And you see, that's the argument. That's what we'll be told. This is just a matter of love. This is just a matter of acceptance. And we are being discriminatory and hateful in our conduct. 866-34-TRUTH. If you've not read my article, go to AskDrBrown.org and click on latest article, Some Honest Questions for Andy Stanley. This is not meant as an attack on him or his faith. I don't know him. I know wonderful reports of what's been done through him through the years and the massive congregation that he has. And I've always thought well of him. Here and there, I've heard comments that I wondered about, but I don't know him. I've never even heard a full message of his. So this is not an assault on a brother in the Lord. It is asking public questions in response to public comments he made that concern me. And as we are looking for clarification, unable to contact him directly, I'm putting these questions out for public discussion. So Pastor Stanley stated, again, regarding Kansas House Bill 2453, which was just designed to protect religious individuals, groups, or businesses from being penalized for refusal to participate in services related to same-sex marriage. Pastor Stanley was critical of Christians standing up against the bill, or for the bill, excuse me. And he said, serving people we don't see eye to eye with is the essence of Christianity. Well, that's true. So you serve people, you love people, you care for people, but do you participate in sin? Do you participate in something that you find morally objectionable as a believer? One commenter on the Charisma News site said this: there has to be wisdom when it comes to love. We love the world doesn't mean we empower them in their transgressions. So should a Christian sell film and editing services to a movie studio that produces porn or X-rated adult films? Should a church building rent the use of the facility to film said X-rated movies if they were asked? Should the church rent the building out to pagan witches or satanic worshipers to perform a black mass? Does love mean Andy marches in a gay pride parade? Does love mean Andy would allow sex offenders to work in the nursery of the church? Now, just a bunch of different questions, and obviously wide-ranging different questions, and some you would say, well, it puts children at direct risk, that last question, obviously. But Where do you draw the line? Hey, we're supposed to serve people. We're supposed to serve people and love them. But does that mean facilitating sin that they commit? 866-34-TRUTH. And remember this. if you're asked to shoot a wedding, as I said last day or two, it doesn't just mean being a photographer. It means getting people at special moments and posing them in special ways and arm in arm and bride kissing groom and so on. And now you're going to be doing it with a same-sex couple. And you're saying, I don't believe this is marriage in God's sight. I don't believe this union is right. I believe everything about it is wrong. And now I'm the photographer taking the picture. Is that serving them or is that empowering them to do wrong? I make an absolute distinction between the two. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Kimberly in Silver Springs, Maryland. Thank you for calling the Line of Fire.
Yes, thank you, Dr. Brown. I'm so glad to hear you and hear this subject. Thank you for giving me the information I needed about the difference in facilitating the sin or serving. And now I understand. I've been looking at CNN for the last 3 or 4 days, and I've been up in arms seeing Erin. I can't remember her last name, but she's Erin. I forgot her name. And then
yeah,
the
forget
guy.
The last name, too, but yes, exactly.
And then the blonde guy, I forgot his name. You know who I'm talking about. That is gay. That
Anderson Cooper, I assume?
Anderson Cooper.
Yeah.
And, I mean, you can tell their personal feelings about this bill. And I've just been up in arms. And I just want to know, do churches in this area, do they have to? Are they forced to do this type of thing or perform marriages or that sort of thing?
No, at this point, there are no clergy and no individual churches that are forced to do this. In the state of New York, a clause was put in when all the Democrats were for changing the law and instituting same-sex so-called marriage. The Republicans were against it. 4 Republicans caved in, but they put a clause in that clergy would not be required to perform same-sex weddings or churches would not be required to host them. But there had to be a clause put in, and I've spoken to religious liberty experts, and they've told me that this will definitely be something that comes against us. In other words, that if we refuse to participate in these as clergy, as ministers, as churches, that we would lose our tax-exempt status. They do expect that to happen if there's not a turn of the tide. And if it happens, it happens. We'll stand up and do the right thing anyway. All right, thank you for the call, Kimberly, 866-34-TRUTH. Again, very simply, there's a difference between serving someone and loving them and laying your life down for them and empowering them to sin or participating in their sin. What if you were asked to do a photo shoot for the nudist volleyball tournament? Would you do it if you were a photographer? Would you say, as a follower of Jesus, I can't? Or would you leave Jesus out of it? All right. Phone lines are getting jammed. 866-34-TRUTH. Since we come back on the other side of the break, I'm going to continue to discuss these issues. But I decided to do something highly unusual. I have a DVD series called Can You Be Gay and Christian? It's probably 7 or 8 hours in content, 5 DVDs. It's a $60 series, beautifully packaged. We address issues. Are we using the Bible to sanction anti-homosexual practice? Is there such a thing as ex-gay? Was Jesus tolerant? I have a 2-hour debate with a gay activist who claims to be a born-again Christian. A whole DVD on how to minister to the gay and lesbian community. It's a $60 series plus postage. It's highly valuable and highly practical and bathed in the love of God and the Word of God. And it's yours for your gift of any size. As you stand with us today and say, Mike, we want to hold your hands up in what you're doing. Be as generous as you can because we want to be able to send this out to everybody. And that means that those who have more can help with those who have less. Some of you can pay for 50 or 100 of these to be sent out to others. So do whatever is on your heart. Stand with us and call right now, 1-800-278-9978, 1-800-278-9978. In fact, if you become a torchbearer, monthly supporter with at least $25 or more per month, I want to send this out to you as my very first gift to you. So call right now. Stand with us as together we are making a difference. And I'll send the $60 DVD series out to you for your gift of any size. 1-800-278-9978.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to the Line of Fire broadcast, 866-348-7884. I'm sharing with you publicly some honest questions for Pastor Andy Stanley in response to public answers that he gave to Kirsten Powers of Fox News regarding the Kansas House Bill 2453, which is not under consideration right now, but was just designed for one purpose, for individuals, groups, or businesses, to prevent them from being penalized for refusal to participate in services related to same-sex marriage. If you heard it reported that there could be an accident and maybe you come with emergency services and realize that the person, you know, that's injured is gay, that based on this bill you could say, hey, we're not going to help you. That is a complete myth, nonsense, bogus, false. Or if someone came into your restaurant and you said, huh, you're gay, I'm not seating you. Certainly you're not going to come into my restaurant. False. Totally 100% false. However, if the restaurant was asked to use one of their special rooms and cater an event celebrating same-sex marriage, that they could say, we don't do that. We don't do that. And look, if when you just turn this around, the bill that's being discussed in Arizona and that's before Governor Jan Brewer, will she sign it? Will she veto it? This is a general religious liberties bill. And in other words, if you went to a Muslim printer and said to that Muslim printer, we are doing an outreach to the Muslim community, and we want you to print up these brochures that compare the Bible with the Quran, that Muslim printer should be able to say, sorry, I'm not going to do that. That violates my faith. I see this as an attack on the Quran. Or maybe you identify as a gay Christian and you say you're a moral person, you're in a committed same-sex relationship, you're a moral person, and you're asked to do a photo shoot at a nudist colony, and you say, hey, that violates my moral standards and my religious beliefs, then you would be able to opt out based on that. That's what's under discussion in Arizona. But the Kansas bill was very, very specific just regarding same-sex so-called marriage because of all of the cases that have now been brought where people have been and are being penalized by the government, by state attorneys general. So my question to Pastor Stanley, when he said serving people we don't see eye to eye with is the essence of Christianity, and Jesus died for a world with which he didn't see eye to eye. If a bakery doesn't want to sell its products to a gay couple, it's their business, literally, but leave Jesus out of it. Well, here's what I don't get. This is not an issue of serving people. This is an issue of compromising your convictions, your religious beliefs, your core values. To say that I will now compromise them or just leave Jesus out of it and not even bring him into the picture because I'm supposed to serve other people. I mean, just to go further with the example. And again, I'm just trying to get clarity from Pastor Stanley or someone on his staff in terms of what his position is since we've been unable to reach him privately and these were public comments he made. This is not an indictment on the man or his ministry or the good that he's done or the people that he's helped or not to say he's not a caring pastor. It's to try to get responses to some controversial public comments that were being made that have caused concern. So to try to understand this, you have a bakery. Two men come in, they say, we want to get married, we want you to bake the cake. Andy Stanley's saying, bake the cake and serve them. And if you don't want to, it's your business, but leave Jesus out of it. Okay, all right, I'm going to take issue with that shortly. But what if you found out that the two men were brothers? And they're going to have a private commitment ceremony because legally they couldn't do it. Would that stop you? Would that cause you to say, I'm sorry, I can't do it? I've got a few more questions to ask, but as soon as we come back, we are going straight to the phones. And Joe, Staten Island, if you're still there, I want to start with you. But our phone lines are lit up, and I want to get to as many calls as I can.
Fire we want, for fire we plead. It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
There was several incidents. One was where I was in a religion class where a teacher clearly said to me and to other students that he did not believe that we should adopt, that the LGBT community had no right to adopt children. And in this time in history, when Russia is having the Sochi Olympic Games and we are fighting for our rights, and he says something like that, it really hurts me.
Let me jump in and give a context. That was the voice of Christopher Karras. He's a grade 12 student at a Catholic school, a French Catholic school in Ontario, in Canada. And he has filed a complaint to Ontario's human rights watchdog over what he considers to be systemic homophobia in his French Catholic school. Now, why did I play that clip as we're talking about honest questions for Pastor Andy Stanley regarding his comments on homosexuality and serving the gay and lesbian community and baking a cake for a gay wedding, etc.? Here's why I played it. This is a Catholic school. This is a Catholic school. And I would expect a Catholic school to say it opposes adoption of children by a homosexual couple. I would expect a Catholic school to say that, because it would say that a child deserves a mom and a dad, and it would say that it also sets a wrong example and brings confusion to that child. And if you believe it is a relationship that is not of God, and no matter how committed the people are to each other, no matter how much they love the kids, and I'm sure their kids have been raised in homosexual households that say it's the best thing that ever happened to them, and they love their dads or their moms, and I understand that. I'm not demonizing all the parents in any way, but I would expect a Catholic school to say that. That's Catholic belief. But what he's basically saying, and others have said, you can't be Catholic. You can't hold to your beliefs. It is where it's going, friends. It's not handwriting on the wall. This is not some thing you have to know. No, this is being shouted from the rooftops, and it has been for years, that those who came out of the closet want to put us in the closet. And for years, people would tell me when I first would use that expression, nobody wants to put you in the closet. But then it changed a few years ago, and they began to say bigots like you belong in the closet. And what I want to say to every pastor and leader listening to me, and I know many of you listen, and many of you have friends that you then speak to after you listen, I just want to say this as plainly as I can. For all of you who think that accommodation is the answer, and that this is the way that we will win over our detractors, I want to make this perfectly plain to you. Unless you affirm homosexual practice and say it is fine in God's sight, and a man being with a man and a woman being with a woman in a committed relationship are fine and blessed in God's sight, unless you say that, you have not gone far enough, and you are still in the camp of a homophobic, intolerant bigot. You may be a nice one, but you're still in that camp. I've said for many years that the unspoken mantra of the gay activists organizations is, we will intimidate and we will manipulate until you capitulate. And sadly, many churches, many leaders, many denominations are just capitulating before the battle even comes to their doors, because they don't want the battle. Well, it's going to come anyway. Now, I'm not saying Pastor Stanley capitulated. I don't know that he understood what the bill was about. I want to probe more what his responses are, hence this discussion. And made sure I sent his article to someone that could get it to him as well, that knows him. Beyond that, we leave it there. These are questions for us. I wanted to get Joe on from Staten Island, but we lost him because he agreed with Pastor Stanley. I wanted to start there. But let us go to the phones, and we will start in Rockville, Maryland. Sarah, thanks for calling The Line of Fire.
Walk ye in it. Strength of Christ to you. May I ingratiate myself for a moment and say we're of the same mind. I have been a Catholic cantor for the Archdiocese of Washington for years. I have moved over to the Methodist Church, and I see the LGBT community pressing, pressing, pressing. I have told them they're on a slippery slope, that the LGBT community was always welcome at churches if they came as anyone else. How do we know you're gay? I ask them, and they never say a word. you and I know how. There is so much to say. This reminds me of when God told us, be either hot or cold, or I will spew thee out of my mouth. And I'm thinking of Pastor Stanley.
Yeah, well, Sarah, let me say this. Again, I don't know the full context of Pastor Stanley's beliefs. I do know that this was information that he gave to Kirsten Powers, and that as he has been asked about it, he has at no point retreated from it, clarified it. So it seems from this, because it's almost a week that's gone by, that he is at home with the comments that he made. And I'm not sitting here as his judge. But Sarah, you're absolutely right. This is not something where we can just sit by passively. This is not something where we can just say, well, it'll go away after a little while. There'll be another big social issue and this will go away. No, no, this is being addressed one way or another. Thanks for the call, Sarah. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Alan in Baltimore, Maryland. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Yes, I wanted to say I find it totally unconscionable that any true Christian can say that they're going to keep God out of any part of their life. I don't know whether Pastor Stanley actually believes. Hello?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm listening.
I don't know whether Pastor Stanley actually believes what he's saying, and he thinks he's showing love to everyone as we're supposed to. Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, sound like it's a blackout. Or whether he has a lack of understanding and the difference that you delineated between showing love to your brother if he's gay and not participating in his sin. I think he's on very, very dangerous ground because I have a friend I've known for going on 30 years. And only in the past 2 years have he saved. In the past 2 years, I finally got to know his true colors. I had the utmost respect for him. He's been saved since he was 17. He's 52 now. But yet, now that we're in the same business, I'm finding out more about him. He says the same thing. He wants to keep God out of this particular business that we're in. And I said, Reggie, the Bible says, in all thy ways acknowledge the Lord. And he just says, no, I want to keep God out. Well, the result is there. He lies, he steals, and he uses three- and four-letter words. I'm just finding this out in the past 2 years. He's stolen from me in this business. I've confronted him, and he'll just out and out lie. He lied to me, lied to someone else. He accused someone else of doing something. He did it. The person and I confronted him, and he still lied.
Yeah, a bottom line thing. Obviously, there are ethical business people that are not born-again Christians. But the fact is, when you know the Lord, you're supposed to know the Lord and say, well, we're going to keep Jesus out of it. Look, it doesn't mean you have to have a Bible out on every counter. It doesn't mean you have to have scripture verses out everywhere. It means that there are decisions that you make. There are principles by which you live. And you say, hey, we can't do that because it violates our godly principles. And if someone asks you, you say, yeah, we are committed to Jesus and he does come first. Hey, Alan, thank you for the call. I appreciate it. Here's the specific comment that Pastor Stanley made. Serving people we don't see eye to eye with is the essence of Christianity. Jesus died for a world with which he didn't see eye to eye. If a bakery doesn't want to sell its products to a gay couple, it's their business, literally. But leave Jesus out of it, meaning leave Jesus out of your reason for doing it. Otherwise, it'll be a bad witness. Again, the bill had nothing to do with a bakery selling products to a gay couple, but rather to participating, lending their services to a same-sex so-called marriage. So I raised this question, the fourth of my five questions in my article. Do you see a difference between Jesus dying for a world, quote, with which he didn't see eye to eye, and Jesus participating in sin? According to the scriptures, Jesus didn't participate in the stoning of the woman caught in adultery. To the contrary, by his words, he stopped it from happening. But he certainly died for those who wanted to stone the adulteress. He died for her, too. Can you agree that it's one thing to lay our lives down for our lost friends and neighbors, and another thing to participate in their sin? Didn't Paul tell us directly in Ephesians 5 not to partner with the sons of disobedience in their works of darkness? And then the fifth question, is it right for you to tell a Christian company that if they want to act on their convictions, that's their business, but they should, quote, leave Jesus out of it? How does a Christian business leave Jesus out of their business? How do people who seek to put Jesus first in every area of their lives now leave him out of their lives when it comes to making important moral and spiritual decisions? My question to Pastor Stanley, if you were a Christian photographer and a nudist colony asked you to do a photo shoot for their annual volleyball tournament, would you leave Jesus out of your decision and just tell them I'd rather not? Would you tell them that as a follower of Jesus you could not do this in good conscience? Or perhaps you'd do the very best photo shoot they've ever had since serving people we don't see eye to eye with is the essence of Christianity. Huh?
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Oh, I take this absolutely seriously. Moral, cultural, spiritual revolution. It all has to be gospel-based. It's not a matter of us taking over and imposing our morals on others. It's a matter of us being so changed that we change the world around us. And if the world around us doesn't change, we stand up for what is right, regardless of cost or consequence, but we do it with love. We do it with grace. We overcome evil with good. We overcome hatred with love. We will be falsely accused and maligned, but let it be that we are being falsely accused, not rightly accused. 866-34-TRUTH. By the way, if you were connected with me on Facebook, if you like our Ask Dr. Brown Facebook page, ASKDR Brown on Facebook, you would have seen an amazing picture this morning. One of the most enjoyable ones that we've posted, and we've got a few more coming today that are worth seeing. It says fearless evangelism, and there's a picture of a cat like looking like startled or like what's this, with a mouse leaning on the cat, and the caption is, "Excuse me, but have you heard the good news of Jesus Christ?" Fearless evangelism. It's being shared and viewed by a lot of people. I think over 30,000 have viewed it so far today. You would have gotten an immediate link to my article of questions, honest questions for Pastor Andy Stanley, and you'd be right in the front line of hearing things happening immediately as they happen. So make sure that you connect. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Bob in Chicago. Thanks for calling The Line of Fire.
Oh, thank you very much, Dr. Brown. Listening to this, and I'm glad I got the opportunity to call, I just think that Christian business owners need to be a little bit smarter.
Go ahead.
Instead of out of...
All right, somehow, Bob, we are losing you. Stay there. We'll see if we can reconnect properly, but we were losing the call. Let's go to Manhattan. Obadiah, thanks for calling The Line of Fire.
God bless you. Thank you for being there. Listen, as a Muslim businessman, you come into my bakery, and I am told that I must make a cake celebrating homosexuality or drinking of whiskeys in a party which is against my religion, am I forced to, just like the Christians, am I under the same penalty as the Christians are in this country,
well,
sir? Could you help me?
Right now, that's where it's going, sir. In other words, the cases that have come up so far have involved Christians, but there would be no distinction if as a Muslim you said you couldn't do it, or as an Orthodox Jew you said you couldn't do it. Let's say you were a caterer and someone said to you, okay, we want you to provide pork products, and you said as a Muslim, I won't do that. Most of society would say, okay, you have the right to that religious conviction. But when it comes to this, the argument is that this is a basic human right for any two people that want to marry, whether it's two men or two women, and therefore you're guilty of discrimination against them. So unfortunately, Obadiah, It would be the exact same thing for you as a Muslim, which is why this really is an issue of freedom of religion for all Americans, not just for the Christian majority, but for all Americans.
We're not hearing this in the news media. We're not hearing the Muslim side of it. And I would think if the Muslims were aware of this, they would be up in arms too, sir.
Yes, all it has to do is have a situation where it comes down to that. In other words, when it hits the news with Muslims, then it's going to come up. Look, I know in England, for example, that there was a school system that had textbooks about same-sex marriage and homosexuality for children. And in this particular community, it was the Muslims who went to the school district and got those books removed. So despite our differences in terms of God and Jesus and the scriptures, we are absolutely united when it comes to freedom of religion. And I stand with you for that as an American. So Obadiah, keep your eyes open, because this will be coming to a community near you. Thank you for the call, and thank you for listening. I appreciate it. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's try to reconnect with Bob. Somehow we lost you in the middle of what you were saying. Time is short, but please go for it.
Okay, can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can now.
Okay, great. Well, as an example that I was going to give a Christian business owner being a lot smarter, if a photographer is required to photograph a gay wedding, the Christian photographer needs to first do an excellent job, obviously. However, make it known that to every person he photographs, he will share Jesus Christ with them, and make it clear that God does not condone this behavior. Also make it known that, if possible, that all money made from the job will go to support organizations combating the redefinition of marriage. I would also be proactive and actively advertise in gay areas that if you try to hire me, this is exactly what I will do. First, do an excellent job, an unquestionable job. Two, share Jesus Christ with every one of your guests. And three, donate all proceeds to combating the redefinition of marriage.
All right. So, Bob, I like the approach in terms of turning it around as saying, if you want me, you're going to get the gospel also. But the question is, would you have the right to talk to anyone there? In other words, if they said you can't talk to anyone, obviously you'd back out. But the other thing is, Bob, that let's say you were just baking a cake. You could say, I'm going to use the proceeds of this cake to give to a ministry that helps people with unwanted same-sex attraction. But the problem would be that you're not going to get to talk to anyone, because they're just going to pick up the cake at your place and potentially bring it over. You just deliver it. But I think in every case, we need to say, how can this be used for the gospel? Bob, thank you for the call. I appreciate it. And look, that still begs the question of, could you do the photo shoot? If they said, okay, that's fine, you can tell everybody about Jesus. Now, obviously, they're not going to let you come in and say, we don't condone this. But these are issues we have to face, friends. And let us pray for the fullness of blessing on Pastor Stanley, that the Lord would use him wonderfully to glorify Jesus even more than he ever has in his life. And if I do get a response from him to these questions, I'll let you know what it is. And, of course, he'd always be welcome on the broadcast to share that response. Okay. Again, if you didn't hear this announcement earlier, I don't know that we've ever done this, very rarely if we have. We have a $60 DVD series, beautifully packaged, Can You Be Gay and Christian? It touches on all the hot-button issues. It's 7-8 hours of lecture, teaching, and a debate that I did. Are we using the Bible to sanction anti-homosexual practice? This will answer so many of the major questions you have. Is there such a thing as ex-gay? Was Jesus tolerant? Debate with a gay activist who claims to be a born-again Christian, and a whole DVD on ministering to the homosexual community. It's yours for your gift of any size. Normally $60 plus postage. Be as generous as you can, but call right now, 1-800-278-9978. Send a message to us that you're standing with us, and I want to send this out as our gift to you. 1-800-278-9978. My bottom line today, we all must examine ourselves and ask, am I seeking to please people, or am I seeking to please God? Is it true that our government, the FCC, was really trying to curtail our freedom of speech on the airwaves?
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Well, thanks so much for joining us on The Line of Fire. We have a very special broadcast. Obviously, we try to make every broadcast special. But we're going to deal with some real hot-button issues. We've got some special guests that will be joining us. And in the second half hour of the broadcast, I'm going to be speaking with Jordan Seculo of the ACLJ, the American Center for Law and Justice, about the recent events with the FCC regarding freedom of speech, communication. Would there be a curtailing of that? Would there be a situation where there would really be discrimination against conservatives or religious groups with conservative views? We're going to talk to Jordan about that. 866-34-TRUTH, if you'd like to join in the conversation. And this half hour, I'm going to be speaking with a special guest from Campus Reform. And I've read some of the most cutting edge, shocking articles from Campus Reform. These are young people on the campuses of America making a real difference. But you know, many of us don't really understand what's happening on the campuses of America. So in a little while, I'm going to welcome to the broadcast Calum Bonham. He is the editor-in-chief of Campus Reform. Previously, he served as editor-at-large for Revealing Politics. He's the host of the Calum Bonham Show and Crossover with Calum Bonham. His videos have received over 3 million views on YouTube. He's been published in hundreds of national and international news outlets, including Fox News Channel, CNN, Drudge Report, etc., and a frequent television guest on several national news programs. And the mission of Campus Reform is this. It's a project of the Leadership Institute. It's America's leading site for college news. As a watchdog to the nation's higher education system, Campus Reform exposes bias and abuse on the nation's college campuses. We'll tell you more about that in a moment, and Caleb will be joining us in just a couple of minutes. But I remember doing an outreach at Yale University. It was in the early 90s. It may have been around 1993. Now, I graduated from college in 1977. I did my PhD work from master's and PhD work from 77 to 85. I graduated from New York University in 1985. I was not an on-campus student. I commuted in and out of New York City, and I knew a lot of the environment around the campus, the various campuses that NYU had, but I was not living on a campus in the city, nor did I live on a campus when I was in college. I was a commuter student. I did this outreach at Yale University. I remember Yale in the 1800s was marked by great revival movements, 1700s into the 1800s, the beginning of the 20th century. Every president of Yale had been a Christian minister. There were 5 mandatory or voluntary Bible studies that students attended on a weekly basis at the turn of the 20th century. 21st century. No, 20th century. Sorry. Sorry about that. But I remember being at the campus and just shocked by the out loud, clear shouting immorality. I mean, it was amazing on every level, heterosexual, homosexual. I remember thinking, wow. And this was 1993. We're talking 20 years ago. What is happening on the campus, and can anybody make a difference? We'll be right back with Calum Bonham from Campus Reform. Send it, Lord.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
A lot of people are questioning paradigms that are sort of crumbling around them. I think we live in a moment where basically every illusion, every central illusion in our society is exhausted. I think monogamy is another one of those institutions that people are looking at and saying, this really doesn't work. It hasn't worked for a long time.
Yeah, that clip is from a short piece. Her Love in the Modern Age, chronicling reaction to Spike Jonze's Oscar-nominated film, Her. Hey, this is the modern age, monogamy, traditional marriage, all these institutions have failed. Let's just get with it. My guest, Kaylin Bonham, is the editor-in-chief of Campus Reform. They have a team of professional journalists that works alongside student activists and student journalists to report on the conduct and misconduct of university administrators, faculty, and students. Kaylin, thanks so much for joining us on the broadcast today.
Hey, thank you so much for having me, Doctor.
Great to have you. Hey, Caleb, how old are you, and what's the average age of the folks that are working with you?
So I'm 27. The average age of the folks we have, I haven't done an analysis of it, but we're fresh college graduates and really looking to report on what we saw going on campus. It's a group of young people that we have college students and recent college graduates working for us. And so we're definitely in touch with the millennial aged college students in America.
All right. Do you think the average parent that sends their kid off to school, and you're talking about some of the elite, most expensive and prestigious universities in America, do you think your average parent today understands the mindset of the campuses, the professors, what's happening there? What's your take?
I do not believe anybody understands the mindset other than those that are genuinely engaged in understanding sort of the political atmosphere, which is a very small minority of Americans. And there's nothing to fault for that. There's too much to keep up with in our society to understand all of that. But when I was in college, I knew that there was political indoctrination going on. Sometimes it is egregious. We just posted a story today, Campus Reform, of a University of Wisconsin at lecturer. He was going off. He was an SEIU guest lecturer that came into this class at the University of Wisconsin. And he starts talking about how, the rise of the Tea Party in 2010 was due to white rage. It was nothing but a bunch of racists. He went on and attacked Scott Walker in this anti-Republican rant. And here's the thing. That right there is an egregious case of liberal bias, where we talked with a student from that class. No alternative viewpoint was offered. This was a freshman general education class. This is a crazy example of liberal bias and abuse. Earlier last year, we published a story of a professor at Michigan State University, William Penn, who got up in front of his creative writing class on the first day and started ranting against the evil Ann Romney. He starts attacking Republicans, claiming Republicans raped this nation. Now, here's the thing. Those two examples are no, you have to be a moron not to realize that's bias. That is abuse going on. That is political proselytizing from, the university pulpit. But what I saw when I was in college was much of the indoctrination is subtle. Much of it is, as my foreign relations professor said, we're not going to refer to Israel as the country, the nation of Israel. We're going to refer to it as an occupied territory. And that right there for a young student going in, even if as I was a junior, had I not been politically active, I would have understood where she's coming from. That would have been my basis of moving forward with understanding Israeli, foreign policy. And that right there is wrong. And that is the sort of indoctrination that goes on. So what we're doing at Campus Reform is trying to be the voice for college students, campusreform.org. We're trying to work with college students to expose what's really going on and let people know so that, parents do have a place to go to understand what's going on campus, so that students have a place to go to make sure that their story is told.
Now, in a moment, I want to talk about positive impact that you've been able to have and give people hope that change can come. The fact you're doing what you're doing itself gives hope to say that the whole younger generation has not drunk the Kool-Aid. But let me try to get into the mindset of a younger person today. I'm about to turn 59. I was a heroin shooting LSD using Jewish hippie rock drummer when I came to faith in 1971. So I was part of the counterculture revolution and I've worked with and taught young people through the decades, but most of the young people I'm with are of like faith and like mind. But what's clear to me, you have a younger generation that will side with the victim, but often not based on truth. In other words, the Palestinian is the perceived victim now to the evil occupier Israel. And without looking at the larger narrative or the facts or truth, there's just this gut level siding with the victim. The same thing with homosexuality. There was a gay kid who got bullied and beat up, and that's wrong, and they should have a right to marry. There's not a larger truth narrative, but more a siding with the victim. There's something positive there. Can you help me to understand the mentality of the college student that not just based on worldly values or carnal values or sinful values, but they seem to be on the wrong side of so many of these issues? Are there common denominators that fuel this type of thinking?
Well, you know, there's definitely, they come to light as graduation kind of goes on and they start their own businesses. And I think it was Churchill that said, A young conservative doesn't have a heart, but an old liberal doesn't have a brain. I mean, naturally, people tend to become more conservative as time goes on. While they're at the university system, that's what we're trying to break through and talk with these kids about. I do think, you know, you take a look at what's going on with the healthcare industry, with the Obamacare and the Affordable Care Act kind of stepping in, and now many universities are having to cancel their student-run plans because of regulations put on by the Affordable Care Act. There was a story that we published last year from Bowie State University, one of the nation's oldest historically black colleges, public university, and students had a healthcare plan that was canceled, and then they were offered a really expensive plan, and it was due to Obamacare, and they, through that experience, understood the pitfalls of, you know, federalized healthcare, of what is going on in that industry. As far as other issues go, I myself am a Christian, and personally, I have my own personal viewpoints on a lot of that stuff. But I do see how people, younger individuals, are attracted to the liberal mentality at first. They're attracted to it because it's based solely on emotion. It appeals to emotion, and it always has like a little tiny grain of salt. But then you dig a little deeper, mm-hmm. and you realize what they're really pushing. You take, university groups in the name of LGBT issues, which perfectly fine being on campus. They are pushing, you know, for anti-discrimination causes in the who can and cannot be involved in a student organization. And it's based in the idea of anti-discrimination. Well, it also begs the question, you know, so they want to make sure that an LGBT member who should be treated fairly, who should be given respect, no matter what your belief, people should be treated fairly, but that they should essentially be, you know, allowed to become the president of a Christian, you know, campus crusade for Christ or something.
Right, but exactly. It would be like someone with Jews for Jesus is now going to lead the Hillel Club, or that someone, you know,
So the original truth is that we believe in fairness. We believe everybody should be treated fairly, and that is something that everybody should believe, especially conservatives. Where it falls into what the liberals truly intend is when they say, now, we are forcing you to allow this person to become the chair. It's the same thing that would happen if you have, atheist in charge of students, Crusaders for Christ. It's like it makes absolutely no sense. It's the force that the institution is putting on organizations that eliminates the purpose of the organization in many ways. And so that is where students fall into it. They see this initial emotional appeal, and they don't think to stage two, to stage three. They don't understand what that may lead to.
Right. And, of course, something that begs the larger question. Maybe we've got a minute for this, and then I want to come back briefly and talk about something in Berkeley that just happened that you've been covering. But
yes.
Are young people able to think through issues critically, or is this just the tweet soundbite version of thinking these days?
I will give you guys hope. There's two videos I did. I'll try to reference in a minute here. The first video I did, I went to campus last year during the government shutdown, and I asked students at the University of Colorado, who do you blame for the government shutdown? I brought a big board, and I had them tally it up. And they blamed primarily, I gave them three options, Republicans, Democrats, or Obama.
Tell you what, let me jump in. I only gave you 30 seconds. We'll come back, and we'll get to that. And then just give one outrageous example of what's happening on campus. Hey, go to the website. It's a fabulous website, campusreform.org.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I am joined by Caleb Bonham of Campus Reform. Go to campusreform.org. If I was not doing radio right now, I would be clicking on the link there, the video of the University of Wisconsin lecturer telling his class that the 2010 election was white rage. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's get back to Caleb. So right before the break, I asked you about the ability of young people today to think critically. Obviously, you've got brilliant young people. You've got them in great schools. They're excelling in many, many different ways. They're becoming genius, you know, computer program developers and educators and scientists and doctors and so on. And yet it seems that often with interaction, everything has to be a soundbite, and it's difficult to get people to really think through an issue. So you were addressing that.
Yes. And the question is with the conservative movement, we frequently we see how the young people vote, which is primarily for more left-leaning candidates. And we say, well, you know, they're just young, naive, and completely out of touch with what's really going on. And much of that is true in many ways, but I think we're a little too hard on college-age students. I do think that they're aware. I went to the campus of CU during the government shutdown, and I asked them, who do you blame for the government shutdown? And overwhelmingly, I had people yelling at me when I was filming this video. They blamed the Democrats and President Obama. And that was in the middle of the government shutdown, when every major media narrative was pumping out the idea that it was the Republicans in Congress that were bringing the whole federal government to a halt because they were radicals and unwilling to compromise. And these students saw through it. I mean, President Obama even said, I will not negotiate with anybody that's going to hold a gun to my head, essentially. And they all said, that is outrageous. You know, he's not negotiating because, you know, he's trying to use this as political football. He's trying to use this as an opportunity to advance his ball. And so they saw through it. The same thing goes with the scandals that were breaking during this administration's first year. I asked students, I took them down a line of when the president said that he learned about Fast and Furious by hearing about it in the news. And when he said he learned about the IRS targeting conservatives through the news. And then when he heard about the NSA spying on Angela Merkel and 35 other world leaders, he heard about it in the news. I took him down this line, and they all started to see. I asked him, is he being honest? Is he just straight up incompetent? Or is he being deceitful? And after taking him down that line of thought, they realized, well, he's probably either incompetent or the administration's not telling us the full story here. They are seeing through a lot of what's going on culturally. And right, when it is a big deal. But you were going to talk about the UC Berkeley story, which definitely is something that is of interest.
All right. So here's what we have to do. And this is going to be the challenge. All right. And these are the type of things that you're bringing to attention on campusreform.org, and that parents need to be aware of and pray more for their kids or have more wisdom when they're sending their kids to certain schools, the environments that they're going into. Here's the challenge. This hour, we often have parents picking up kids, little kids, and little kids are in the car. And we talk about controversial issues, but we try to do so in a way that does not paint every kind of wrong picture for a little kid to hear. So let's just try to do this. It's hard to do given the context here.
We can get the version.
Yeah, all right. Go ahead. Tell us what happened.
So the G-rated version, UC Berkeley, you know, a typically left-leaning campus, very left-leaning. There was a group of elementary school kids that were touring the university during what the university puts on is Sex Week. And so it is a week where you educate students about issues that I just mentioned. And yep. at this event, the students were, you know, encountered a giant walking male symbol, male phallic symbol.
Uh-huh.
And engaged in very explicit games, including condom tosses into specific drawings of the male and female anatomy. And if you go to campusreform.org, you need to take a look at this story. As you said, Dr. Brown, this is probably not something we can say on the air, but it is definitely something you need to read and see, you know, just the ridiculous things that universities are putting on and how they're treating our college students.
And Caleb, last question for you. Are you making a difference? Are people waking up? Are you changing minds?
Absolutely. I believe that we are. I know that the message is getting passed around all over the nation. We have had in, you know, there was a professor late last year that forced, right before the election, 2 years ago, forced her students to pledge that they would vote for the president. And she has now been dismissed. There was the William Penn incident where he got up and was speaking, and he was put on administrative leave. We are definitely making a difference. And we want anybody out there that wants to, you know, I don't view Campus Reform as some entertainment website or some site that you can go to just to get news. I see it as a tool. It's a tool for any student out there, for any parent that has a kid in college or any parent that knows what's going on, you know, with young Americans, to get your voice heard, to send us tips, to send us guest commentary, to get in contact with us about other things you think need to be addressed. You can reach us at contact@campusreform.org or tips@campusreform.org. We are making an impact. You take a look. I'm sure many of your readers heard about the Reagan textbook that was claiming conservatives were, you know, we view people as incapable of charity or that we view people as lazy. It claimed right. that Ronald Reagan was a sexist. We broke that story because a student came to us and said, this is outrageous. There's a lot that is sitting right out in the open and that needs to be reported on. And I want you guys, your Absolutely. Whole audience, you specifically, Doctor, to view Campus Reform as a tool to help get that Absolutely. Voice heard.
Yeah, Caleb, and you are certainly making a difference. Folks, you can also follow Caleb at Caleb Bonham, B-O-N-H-A-M, on Twitter. And look, when I become aware of things through Campus Reform, it gets reported on this broadcast in our national audience, and people become more aware. They wake up to the reality of what's happening. Part of the purpose of light, according to Ephesians 5, is to expose darkness. So I'm blessed mm-hmm. to hear it. I know that young people are being raised up with hearts aflame and with brains fully functioning to make a difference. So thanks for your courage, and may God's blessing be on you. Thanks so much, Caleb.
Hey, thank you so much. Same to you. Take care.
All right. Friends, go to campusreform.org. And we did something the first hour. It was kind of a last-minute decision I made and informed our team right before the broadcast. We rarely, if ever, do something like this. I have a $60 DVD series. Oh, about 8 hours or more of teaching and even a debate with a gay activist. It's called Can You Be Gay and Christian? $60 plus postage, but it's yours for your gift of any size. We just ask you to help as you're able. And those who have more, if you're able to give more, you help those who have less. Stand with us. We are on the front lines. We are making a difference, but we're doing it together with you. So your gift of any size, I want to send you the $60 comprehensive DVD series, which includes how to minister to the gay and lesbian community. Call right now. This is by phone only, 1-800-278-9978. That's 1-800-278-9978.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I'm not an alarmist. I will sound the alarm when I feel it's necessary, but I'm not an alarmist. I'm not one of those going around saying the sky is falling. I'm not one of those going around thinking that everything is a government conspiracy to take over my private life. I'm not one thinking that everybody is capitulating to evil and only a few of us are standing for righteousness. Nope. I'll tell you the truth, though, and I'll sound the alarm so that we know how to respond. Michael Brown, thanks for joining us today on The Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. This is news that was just sent to me moments ago. Federal judge strikes down Texas ban on gay marriage, postpones enforcement of decision pending appeal. Well, you better believe there's an appeal coming. Friends, we've been talking about this, that in state after state, where the people of that state have overwhelmingly said marriage is the union of one man and one woman, and we want that enshrined in our Constitution. We want a constitutional amendment, or we want that to be state law, and we are voting as the people of this state, that these laws are being challenged and activist judges are overturning the will of the people. A federal judge declared, and this is Fox News, a federal judge declared Texas ban on gay marriage unconstitutional Wednesday, which is today, but left it in place until an appeals court can rule on the case. Judge Orlando Garcia said this: without a rational relation to a legitimate governmental purpose, state-imposed inequality can find no refuge in our United States Constitution. Where does the United States Constitution redefine marriage? Where does the United States Constitution say that a man can marry a man or a woman can marry a woman? Quote, these Texas laws deny plaintiffs access to the institution of marriage and its numerous rights, privileges, and responsibilities for the sole reason that plaintiffs wish to be married to a person of the same sex. No, for the sole reason that that's what marriage is. 866-34-TRUTH. The ruling is the latest in a series of victories for gay rights activists following similar decisions in Utah, Oklahoma, and Virginia. Also very disturbing, is the comments made by Attorney General Eric Holder, where he has told the attorneys general in each state that if you don't feel that you should defend your state law upholding marriage as the union of a man and a woman, then you don't have to. I mean, this is completely exceptional for someone to do what he is doing. Totally exceptional for him to do that as an attorney general. And to say, hey, if I was in a situation, say, where there were segregation laws to uphold, and I was the attorney general in that state, I wouldn't have done that decades ago, so I certainly wouldn't do it now if I were you. I mean, this is extraordinary. Forget the will of the people. Forget what everybody signed up for. Forget the only definition of marriage we've ever known as a nation. Forget the fact that the reason the government gets involved with marriage is because marriage conveys benefits on the society, and therefore the society conveys benefits on marriage, and those marriages have to do with a man and woman coming together, with the norm being the potential for procreation and then joining a kid to a mom and dad. So now one more situation. This was last week, and we're about to bring on Jordan Seculo, who's going to give us a report. The Federal Communications Commission 5 days ago pulled the plug on its plan to monitor American newsrooms. Was this really an attempt by the government to suppress our freedom of speech and reporting?
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Friends, as soon as you have a moment, go to my website, askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org. Click on latest article and read my article, Some Honest Questions for Pastor Andy Stanley. This has been shared almost a couple thousand times in the last couple of hours. We talked about it in the first hour. My guest is Jordan Sekulow. I've been a longtime friend of his dad, Jay, who founded the ACLJ. Jordan is the executive director of the American Center for Law and Justice and host of Jay Sekulow Live syndicated radio program, heard on many of the same stations that this broadcast is on and many more than this broadcast is on. He currently oversees much of the ACLJ's international work, engaging with government officials and international leaders on human rights issues around the world. Hey, Jordan, first, appreciate you taking time out of your schedule to join us, and so appreciate what you and your dad and organization have done these many years now. When it comes to the FCC, what was really going on? How far could this have gone?
You know, it's interesting because on this issue with the FCC, I think, it shows when the people, it kind of gives them that feeling that, okay, it is worth fighting back, it is worth speaking up, because, yes, some of the fights are long. You know, we're a legal group primarily, so a lot of those fights take years to go into court. And people that support us understand that, they know, but you also don't ever give up the opportunity of pre-court action and trying to stop things before they go into force. And here with the FCC, I don't think, honestly, people would have believed this if it hadn't come out of from an FCC commissioner who wrote an op-ed in the Wall Street Journal, because it did sound so out of the blue. And honestly, the FCC has not been involved in content regulation since 1987, when they stopped enforcing the Fairness Doctrine. And then it took until 2011, and it was because of public outcry that the FCC took the Fairness Doctrine off the books there, so that it could not come back and rear its head without going through this kind of process, like this current, what they called study would do. It was called a mass market study on critical information needs, and they identified issues that they believed needed to be discussed in at the radio level and at the local television news level, where the FCC has the most authority, of course, over the airwaves. And so even for national radio shows, because you're, you know, syndicated on different networks that are locally owned, and so they've got to get licensing every 8 years, the FCC was going to have this voluntary, and that's a huge asterisk because, again, you get their licensing. So if they asked you, if you were one of the 56 networks that they wanted to study in this review that they were going to do, they would ask you, if you said no, of course, you've got to get your license from them. So you can imagine it's not the same kind of voluntary as the word is usually used. But they were going to go in and basically see if you were covering the issues they thought that were most important, issues like the environment, healthcare, and, you know, it was interesting because issues like that usually the local news would cover were not really the priority. They were kind of liberal issues and economic opportunity and empowerment. So you look at that, and they were going to start this spring. An FCC commissioner blew the whistle on it. And because of that, I think people took it seriously. They spoke up in mass numbers. And because of that, even in the current political climate, which has not been, which has been extremely partisan and very divided, the FCC shelved the plan, which is not normal for the FCC to actually, you know, admit that this was wrong. But you know, ultimately, nothing is done out of good faith in Washington. Their first response was, we'll look into it, and then 24 hours later is when they pulled it. So if you didn't speak up, if people didn't speak out about it, this would have actually gone into effect.
Now, was this a matter of conservatives being paranoid and said the Fairness Doctrine cracked down on us, and it wasn't really fairness that they were after, but rather getting liberal voices heard in conservative settings? Were conservatives just being paranoid or overreacting, or is there data to make clear that this really was targeting people from our point of view?
Oh, yeah. It said in the report, actually, that the focus would be on talk radio. So not so much on, you know, they didn't care about music stations. And even though everybody gets the same kind of licensing, they didn't care about those or what they were reporting. So if they were covering in any of their talk shows, which most of them have, the critical information needs, they were focused in on talk radio. And part of the study was actually going to review not just what they have oversight over, but also the newspapers, which the FCC has no control over and no oversight over, and as well as what's on, you know, cable TV news and the internet. So it was going to be this mass study. And listen, I mean, if you were a Christian talk or conservative talk radio, you were not going to come out well in this study. You know, you were the ones that would be, and were the ones that would not be covering the issues they wanted or in the way that they wanted to. And so, yeah, it was pretty clear here. Listen, if it wasn't the FCC commissioner blowing the whistle on it, I think it would have been a much tougher issue because people may not have taken it as seriously. But because it actually came from an FCC, there's only five commissioners. And this was a commissioner, he's Republican, but he was appointed by President Obama because there has to be a certain political makeup on the commission. So there's three Democrats now and two Republicans, and it has to be it can't be any more than three from one party. So he was appointed by President Obama a couple years ago, and he blew the whistle. It's very unusual, and that's why I think there was this kind of outcry and why it wasn't more of like a media generated or a interest group generated story. It was, whoa, the FCC, a commissioner is coming out opposed to his other commissioners, and that this is real, that this is legitimate. And so people, when he blew the whistle, people took it very seriously, very quickly. And the FCC, I don't think, wanted to be under that kind of scrutiny. But we have to remember, and I think that this was a reminder, back in 2011, there was talk from the past chairman of the FCC, to reinstate, to bring back the fairness doctrine. And what people remember from that is that, in fact, though, they say, you know, it's to get more viewpoints on the air. In fact, what it does is just silence a lot of the discussion, because different stations just decide, you know what, controversial issues, I don't want to get involved in some FCC scrutiny, so we'll just report news as it comes, kind of generically, and we're not going to analyze, we're not going to discuss like we're doing right now, we're not going to have a conversation, and we're just going to report it and move on. And there was talk of that. And so the FCC actually got so many calls into their offices that they decided to remove it because they didn't even want it on their books anymore. But the idea that they won't try to do it again is also not the case. They will probably try to come back and do this another way. But they've now got this kind of new level of scrutiny on them, which I think is good, because it's another one of those examples of a government agency. It's not its own department, but agency that it can run out of control, even though Congress does control the reins.
Now, one thing that you have done, Jordan, with ACLJ is you empower the individual. Because a lot of people say, what can I do? I'm just one person. And it can be frustrating. I know many people tell me, they'll thank me that I articulate their concerns. I represent what they're feeling, but I have a platform to do it, thankfully. Well, you not only have the media platform with what you do, but you have a way of empowering individuals. And then you come with this conglomerate voice of all these individuals and bring this to D.C. or bring it to Iran for the pastor there. So explain to our listeners how this works and the real effect that they can make as an individual when they partner together with something as simple as signing a petition.
Well, it all starts with the basic right. I mean, it's our First Amendment right. It's one you have to actually, it's another right you have to constantly protect, which is our right to petition the government for redress of grievance. And that's what we do with our Capitol Hill focused petitions. And some people wonder, you know, does it matter? Does it have an impact? And these kind of events, I think, in this kind of quick turnaround and a victory for freedom of speech show, I mean, if people weren't speaking out, the FCC, as they indicated, they were already kind of playing whether or not this was going to get a lot of attention. Their first response was not, oh, this is wrong. That was their second response. Within about 3 days, when hundreds of thousands of people were speaking out, they were signing petitions, putting their name to paper, and we break it down. You know, for members of Congress, what we'll do is we'll break it down even to the level of congressional district. So they'll know, you know, some of the larger petitions, how many people that they represent are concerned about an issue. And if we do it internationally, and then sometimes with our cases, we're actually able, people can actually join into the case because we're a public interest group, so they can sign on and be a part of the cases in court, and we do that when that opportunity arises. So it's a way to effectively express your outrage, maybe, or your disappointment, or your feelings about the issue, whether you're for something or against it. And you know, we take care, and sometimes, you know, we move on issue to issue. But we have a whole team of people who are constantly working on issues that may not be what we're focused on radio. They may not be the main issue that we're talking about. We've got offices all around the world and lawyers working in all those offices on different issues. And so when we ask people to speak out on one and we really focus in for, you know, a week or 2 weeks or even longer, it's because it's one that we really need to hear their voices from. There are other issues we can handle with the support we get that may not call for that kind of petition effort. But I think it's important that we always exercise the rights we're given, and one of those is to petition the government. And so, you know, we've taken that to heart, and really people have responded in a great way. It's a way for them to kind of record their feelings, their opposition.
Yeah, making an amazing difference. Friends, ACLJ.org. If you're not connected with them, get connected today. Hey, Jordan, thanks for joining us, and blessings to you and
Absolutely.
Your whole family and team.
Thanks.
All right.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks so much for joining us today on the Line of Fire. If you missed any of the last hour and 50 minutes, I encourage you to go to my website later today, askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org. Click on latest audio. You'll hear our discussion from the first hour, where I raised some probing, honest questions for Pastor Andy Stanley, son of Pastor Charles Stanley, pastor of what may be the second largest church in America. And he had made some comments, controversial comments, regarding a bill that was being discussed in Kansas. And we've been unable to interact with him privately or have him on the air because of his schedule, apparently. But I raised five questions for Pastor Stanley. Since I posted a link to this article, maybe three-something hours ago, it's been shared a couple thousand times, and there's a lot of interest in it. So talk about that the first hour. I'd encourage you to listen and read the article. Click on latest article to read the article and share it with others. And then the first half hour of this hour spoke with Caleb Bonham from Campus Reform, just 27 years old, but with other young people making a real difference on our college campuses. His website, campusreform.org, and just spoke with Jordan Sekulow of the American Center for Law and Justice, ACLJ.org. I want to take a couple more minutes and mention a few things to you. We're making available a resource, one of the most important that we have. It's a 5-DVD set, beautifully packaged. It's $60 normally plus postage, called Can You Be Gay and Christian? It's a series I did at the Blumenthal Performing Arts Center in Charlotte, North Carolina in 2008. We rented out the Blumenthal for lecture series five straight nights in February of 2007 and February of 2008. It was a faith step to do it. We had no funding to do it. We were taking on those that, well, let's say the first year that we rented it out, we had in our funding the previous year monies that came in specifically to be used for issues of righteousness in the society, about $9,000 total. We were taking on an organization in terms of wanting to bring issues to the table and challenging some of the statements of an organization with a budget at that time of $35 million. So you do the math in terms of the differences in resources. And really, there are other organizations as well, gay activist organizations, whose viewpoints we were challenging, but simply saying, let's put the issues on the table so the public understands them and can interact with them. We did it, the first series in 2007 on homosexuality, the church and society, and then the second series on Can You Be Gay and Christian? Again, it was a step of faith to do it, to rent out the Blumenthal. We felt the Lord was in it, and he met us and supplied. But more than that, these DVDs have really circulated and really made an impact. And the first night I did the lecture series on this, are we using the Bible to sanction anti-homosexual prejudice? And that's really the question to ask. Are we using the Bible the way slave traders and slave owners use the Bible to justify the slave trade? Are we using the Bible the way some preachers did to justify segregation? Are we using the Bible the way it's been used through the centuries to suppress women's rights or suppress women's ability to minister in certain contexts? Are we now doing that with the Bible to sanction anti-homosexual practice? I think you'll find it to be a real eye-opening lecture. I'll tell you in a moment how you can get this. The next night, we tackle the subject, is there such a thing as ex-gay? Do people really change? Is it possible for anyone to ever change? Or are they just suppressing who they really are? What does science say? What do people say? What are their stories? Is it just like trying to make someone who's a lefty use their right hand to write when they're really a lefty? Or do people really change? And then the third night, was Jesus tolerant? We're told that we need to be tolerant. And on the one hand, there's a care and a compassion and a humility that is included in the concept of, quote, tolerance. But more broadly, was Jesus tolerant? What does tolerance mean? And was Jesus tolerant? That was the third night. And then the fourth night, I debated Harry Knox. He was sent by the Human Rights Campaign. That was the organization we challenged the year before. I just said, let's put the issues on the table. They then called me out at their fundraising banquet, the then president of the HRC. They refused to even acknowledge us to the press when they were asked for a statement about our lecture series, wouldn't even comment on it. But after the lecture series, Joe Salmanese, who was then the president of the HRC, got up and publicly called me out by name and challenged me. Someone recorded it while there. I have the tape of it, and said, we're not afraid to take you on, basically. And I wrote to them and said, well, let's have a conversation. Let's have a civil debate on the issues. So I was pleased that they sent Harry Knox, who at that point directed the religion and faith arm of the HRC. Harry claims to be a born-again Christian and is a practicing homosexual. So we did a two-hour debate, dialogue, a Christian response to homosexuality. And then the last night, I did an extensive teaching on how to minister to the gay and lesbian community. I think you realize this is a very important resource and a very practical one. Pastors, for your churches, you can show it weekly in a midweek service or as a special Bible study. And individuals, obviously, the material is tremendously eye-opening, in-depth, practical, and bathed in the love and grace of God. It is grace and truth being presented. It's a $60 series plus postage, but it's yours for your gift of any size. I literally mean that because we want to get it out to you. I just make an appeal, as always, when we do something like this. Some of you have more, and you're able to give more, and it's easy for you to help buy 500 or 1,000 sets of these to give out to others. And some of you, you have very little, and a very generous gift from you will be very small. I want to be able to send this out to everyone. So your gift of any size, I'm going to send you this 5-DVD series, Can You Be Gay and Christian? I think you'll find it tremendously helpful. And we're just asking you to stand with us, to hold our hands up as we are on the front lines making a difference. So call right now. This is by phone only. I made this decision right before the show, contacted our offices. I said, I know this is short notice, but I just feel I need to do this today. So call in 1-800-278-9978. That's 1-800-278-9978, whatever the Lord lays on your heart, or be as generous as you're able, 1-800-278-9978. If you become a torchbearer today, monthly supporter, standing with us with at least $25 or more per month, not only will we send you a new message every month and give you free access to our online classes and a 15% discount in our online bookstore, not only will you be partnering with everything that we do, but I want to send this to you as a gift for your first month for signing up. So stand with us, help us as you are able, and together, friends, we are making a difference. My bottom line today, we are not children of darkness. We are children of the light. And that means we are awake and we are aware. Let us live as children of light.